Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino is back from his training.
That's right.
So are you better now?
Better?
Well, better than you were, because you were in training.
Of course. Yes.
Well, this is what we
martial arts training.
Yeah.
You know, 4 hours on Sunday. Yeah,
all radio people should do that
for an hour.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and you put pictures up of yourself in training on there. And what kind of comments do you get? Anything good or bad or what?
It's all good.
Oh, really?
I haven't had any bad comments. Well, you haven't posted yet. So.
Yeah.
What do you mean, me?
We've got a writer who is very disgusting. No, actually, he's not. Very, very nice man. He was on the Noir Bar, at the bar readings that we're doing for Seattle, and really good reader, actually, and funny book, interesting. And so we brought him on. And so Lawrence Allen, thank you for being on the show.
No, thank you for having me.
You must be controversial in some way, because you've got a series out, and it's a Jimmy Cooper mystery series, and you've got two books out, and... of course, they've got interesting names, of course, so we'll just get it. Big Fat
Oh My
Stuff is one, and Big
Oh My
Deal is book two. Right. And so do you kind of worry about backlash for calling your books with swear words like that?
I wish I had thought about that before I named them. yes and no. I mean, no in the sense that I knew when I decided to name the first book, I knew the book will not be available in Walmart. I knew that, but I kind of decided against conventional wisdom, you know, where you title a book, you know, as like, here's the book and it's inviting and, you know, stuff like that. And I kind of thought opposite. I thought, what if my title is more of a bouncer, and that, like, if you don't like the title, if you're not amused by the title, This is not a book for you. I consider my book very PG-13, and it's mostly because of, you know, there's the occasional, you know, F-bombs here and there and stuff like that. But like, there's a certain tonal quality to the book and to the main character that I think you have to approach with a sense of humor and amusement, and maybe a little, this is a mystery that's not necessarily going to take itself seriously or, well, no, it takes itself seriously, but I don't think it's taking the genre super seriously. And so having the title there, besides making me kind of giggle at the either the audacity or the stupidity of the title, kind of acts as like a bouncer. And like, if you are amused by it, you're going to take that ride. So it kind of cuts out people who would kind of, for lack of a better term, clutch their pearls at the title. Like, the book's not for them. Like, it's just not for them. Like I said, I know it's not ever going to be available in Walmart. So I accepted that. But then there were other moments of like, oh, that's not possible. Oh, crap. You know, so you spend an hour or two like bemoaning the choices that you've made. And then you ask yourself, would I have named it otherwise? I'm like, no, I really wouldn't. Because like, when I'll be at a book conference or whatever and I tell somebody the title, for the most part, people are like, oh my gosh, really? Your name is the, oh my God. And that intrigues them more than repulses them.
Yeah. Well, it should. I was attracted to it in a sense. just like, you know, you seem to have pictures of yourself even that are kind of funny, you know, mm-hmm. or I think they're meant to be funny. Like you do things to.
Yeah. You know, a little bit of a send up, maybe, you know, yeah. a little twist on the normal author picture than what we we normally expect.
Yeah, it's not like the real serious guy sitting mm-hmm. on a bench looking over the lake, you know, all mm-hmm. all deep in thought. It's like, yeah. You know, you're standing there mushing your face. And but in a way, that sort of, doesn't that kind of, it gives me an introduction to what I'm going to get when I pick mm-hmm. up a book or something you've written or done. I'm going to think there's some humor to it right away. Yeah. That's, you know.
Yeah.
But you're writing a mystery series. You have to be very careful where the humor goes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to be clear, like, I'm glad you're using the word humor, because I don't think it's, you know, humor, I think, encapsulates a broader swath than, like, the word comedy does. And why I think there's a lot of humor to the book, to both books. I think there's a lot of humanity. And there is seriousness. There is an emotional core. It's not like, I'm not writing a Three Stooges comedy, and so I'm very conscious of that. So there is going to be a humorous view of the situation that Jimmy is in, but also maybe a little, you know, twist on what we expect in a mystery and how a mystery should resolve. Or I'm a big fan of, like, of The Thin Man, and, like, you know, at the end of the first movie where he's at the dinner table and he's laying it all out, you know, like that kind of trope that exists, and like, how can I play with that? I mean, it's all through a lens that I have a very hard time controlling. Like, I have an off-kilter sense of humor, and I kind of like to challenge status quos of things. That's just who I am, and so that comes out in the voice that I write in as well. And so for me, it's like the whole package. Like, I don't want, you know, from the cover, from the title, from my own picture, like, I want it to be a clear, like, this is the ticket you're buying, you know what I mean? So it's I love humor, I love comedy, and I can talk about it all day, but, like, ultimately I feel like humor and comedy shows humanity in a way that I don't think actually drama does. I think drama sanitizes our humanity a little bit to make it more, you know, I mean, James Bond is always well-dressed. And, like, how does that actually happen? Like, he's, you know, he's never, like, inappropriately dressed for any occasion. Like, that does not happen in my life. I sometimes show up and I realize I now have a stain on my dress shirt. Like, that doesn't happen. But it happens in humor and comedy. And I think there's a way our humanity is more fully shown in humor.
Yeah, it's just like the truth of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think you need comedic timing to create humorous prose? Kind of like, I know it's not the same as comedy, but like a stand-up comedian needs to have a sense of timing to land jokes. Do you feel it the same way in prose fiction?
I do. I think it's. I mean, everybody's timing is going to be different. Everyone's humor is going to be different. What works for one, it won't work for another. But I think as a writer, I think you should be conscious. And, like, I don't write punchlines. I don't necessarily objectively aim, like, I'm not doing punchlines like a stand-up comic, but I do know where, like, oh, that's a funny observation that Jimmy's making, or that's a funny twist on something, that's a, you know, so I'm very aware of that. So I do, like, just on a technical level, I make sure it's very clear on the page, like, that's the moment. So, like, if there's a funny observation by Jimmy or a funny moment, like, I'm making sure that's at the last, that's the last sentence of a paragraph. For example, it's not, the thing isn't hidden within a paragraph, it's the last thing, or it's a sentence unto itself. It's like, so it is consciously building and structuring those moments for maximum effect, either an emotional effect, like something terrible has happened, or, you know, Jimmy is reacting emotionally to something that's happening that strikes him, that's triggering something from his past or whatever, or it's a funny moment. You know, like, the relationship between he and his mom is very, there's a lot of conflict. You know, she's a very stern professional person and he is not. And so, like, her reactions to him in some ways are funnier than what he's saying. So I'm always making sure it's clear on the page that this is the funny moment. And I do that, you know, it's the last thing. So I'm, I'm definitely structuring those moments when I discover something as I'm writing, like, oh, this could have that. Ah, okay. Then I'm making sure it lands.
So now this is the Jimmy Cooper mystery series. So these are two books. So tell us about the basic premise of Jimmy Cooper and what the series is kind of about.
So Jimmy Cooper is a former child star. He's also a recovering addict, like a lot of former child stars. And he crashed and burned his career and, you know, in a very public way, like a lot of these child stars do, unfortunately, because the business can eat them up. So he crashed and burned his career, but now he has a second shot at fame as a famous private detective in Los Angeles. He works as the in-house detective at his mom's law firm, where his sister also works. You know, he'll sometimes take cases on his own and sometimes through the firm. So in the first book, the first book opens with him in the middle of one of these very classic Los Angeles car chases through the city that we as Angelenos like to watch on our TV. And he's suddenly back in the public eye. And the firm, the sister decides to kind of use his newly rediscovered fame, to help the firm get bigger cases, to help them stay afloat. So it's kind of Jimmy navigating, the series as a whole is Jimmy navigating his fame in a now sober way, how that helps and hurts being famous again. You know, his past is kind of a constant thing for him. So overall, it's kind of like this guy who's trying to figure out how to be sober, how to be a whole person again, and a healed person. So hopefully Jimmy's on a course of healing rather than, which I find in a lot of mysteries, like how many private detectives or cops are just constantly drinking and like, well, they're clearly they never spiral all the way out, which is unfortunate. Like, you know, 20 book series and they're clearly alcoholic. Shouldn't they have cirrhosis by now? Should somebody say, hey, buddy, you need to go to rehab? But they never do because, you know, we just want them to have enough to like be they're hurt men. And so Jimmy's in a course for healing. That's my plan.
Well, so who is Jimmy Cooper and how do you relate to him? You know, he's a character, but how do you see him? Do you hear him, feel him, watch him as a movie? What goes on with you?
That's a great question. I really hear him. I write in first person. I write Jimmy in first person, and it can be. I mean, there's obviously challenges of first person of like now Jimmy's got to be in every scene, but like I love being on the inside. I love hearing him. You know, hopefully I'm not as damaged as Jimmy, but we're all damaged in some ways. No one's coming out of this undamaged. You know what I really get to tap into when I'm writing Jimmy is my own just like anxieties, my own like questions, like why are things the way they are? That emotional like, oh my God, I would love to be able to say that to that powerful person or whatever. So he becomes quite an instrument to speaking truth to power in all its different forms. But like when I'm writing an internal monologue, I can just like really tap into my own like what the
is
wrong with me? Like why is this so hard? Just like why is writing so hard? Why is this? And also just dealing with success, not success. Like what is that? That's such a transitory thing. I know for me, because my background was in playwriting and tried to break into television and it didn't work for me. Part of the reason why I eventually kind of walked away from it was I was getting too caught up in a need for external validation. You know, like, what do I have to write so you just love me? I think that's what Jimmy's gone through a lot as an actor. And I think the pressures for Jimmy were too much. And so he had to numb himself with pills and booze. And there's other things going on for him, too. So I think that kind of learning of self-love, I think that's if we're going to be all therapy about it. I didn't bring my tissues. I might start crying. Yeah. who knew the House of Mystery would make me? We'd be like Oprah.
check under your seat. You.
Oh, boy. Right. Thank you. I got a car. You got a car. Every listener, you're going to get a car.
Yeah, right.
Right now. Yeah. So I guess it's the anxieties and like hopefully my own course towards healing and being a better person, whatever that means. I don't know what that means anymore. But yeah, so that's how I get inside of Jimmy. And I kind of love it. As messy and as ugly as it is, it's really fun and it is healing for me.
Yeah, therapeutic in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's sort of like, isn't that sort of how society is anyway right now with social media and with all of the stuff and people are doing? And isn't kind of a lot of the population looking for that same sort of validation of outside people? Oh, yeah. I have 10,000 followers. Ooh, yeah. You know, and that sort of thing.
And I think over the past, 10 or 15 years, I mean, I think there's always been a desire for fame, whatever fame is. But I think because it seems to be so achievable now through a viral video or a tweet that's gone wrong or whatever, you can suddenly become famous. And you might be famous as a great person or you might become famous as a villain, but for many people it doesn't matter. And I think in some ways it's easier to seek external validation than to come to terms with the messy, flawed human being that you are and love that person. It's far easier, like, I have 10,000 people. Aren't I great? It's like, but those 10,000 people don't actually know you, and you don't know them. So it's kind of fleeting and hollow. And Jimmy has gone through that, and I have to kind of ignore. I go back and forth with my own social media experience. Like sometimes I ignore it, and other times I go like, why don't people really retweet my tweet? And it's like, because it's just a dumb tweet, Larry. That's why.
Yeah.
No one cares. So I think we're in a place in the world right now where everyone wants to be desperately loved by a lot of people. Again, now we switch to Dr. Phil. And to Dr. Phil would say, you just got to love yourself first.
That's right. I was thinking more RuPaul. If you don't learn to how are you going to love anyone else?
That's a better, you know what? We should all aspire to be RuPaul and not Dr. Phil. But
yeah.
There you go. Yeah, RuPaul. RuPaul for the win.
Yeah, I think that's good because that the sense of reality in a mystery book is really what works because isn't the character king in a sense? Isn't it the most important thing in a book at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. It's about Jimmy Cooper and that character, the things he goes through, and you have to relate to that person, and that becomes what the book's about. It's not so much about his issues or what he's trying to fix. It's about him.
I mean, I've been awfully tempted to say sometimes when I'm panels that I don't care about the mystery, but then I think, I shouldn't say that at a panel at a mystery book conference, but I'm going to say it. I don't always care about the mystery. I mean, I do care about the mystery. I want the mystery to be satisfying, but I don't care as much about the mystery as I care about Jimmy's story through the mystery. I make my damnedest sure that there is an emotional, personal story for Jimmy in the book. I've read too many mysteries that were kind of forgettable because, sure, the main character's this, and they're going really tough through this mystery. But, like, there's no other thing for them other than, like, to solve this mystery. And so it kind of creates for me a very static character that I don't really care about. I think the character is king, and I think especially in mysteries, I think that's who we come back to. We want to know how this person is relating to this situation, and this is why Holmes has lasted as long as he has
in
the public imagination.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily because of Doyle's like twists were so fantastic. I think it's the relationship between Watson and Holmes' very particular personality,
Exactly. It's the character. And even 100 years later, it still lives. People still go to try and visit Holmes' home, who never existed. You know what I mean? People are so wrapped up in the character. That'll last hundreds of years. Other people will rewrite them, but still the character.
Yeah. And, I think that's true about any, I think, we had that golden age of mystery in, 30s and 40s, and I think only certain books made it out of that period are the ones that had interesting characters, the ones that we could either relate to or we aspire to. I mean, there's so many books from that period. There's so many short stories, but we don't revisit them because the characters themselves weren't any more interesting than the mystery. And, right. You know, so it's like, well, why revisit? It's like, okay, I know that answer, but like, I'll reread Marlowe. Cause I mean, Chandler's language is elevates it all, but like, I like the character as well. So that's the long lasting thing. And that's one of my goals for this series is not necessarily, I mean, I would love it if everyone was like, oh, I love that book. But what my dream is that Jimmy himself becomes an iconic character, that he's the one that people are like, I can't wait to read the next story about Jimmy Cooper. Like that's my dream, you know, not necessarily to write the perfect mystery.
Something that stays with people. Mm-hmm. And so subtext, are you putting subtext in this, or do you have meaning then that underlies, or is this complete entertainment?
Well, I think very few things are just merely entertainment. I think all things should be entertaining, engaging in some way. When you say subtext, do you mean like, is there a larger meaning behind the books?
Yeah, like it might have happened organically as you put it together, and now it's part of it, or it might be something you thought out, as in, you know, is there a meaning? Is there something that, you know, like I pick up a book, one of these books, take it home and read it, and of course, you know, love the character, have great entertainment, have a few laughs, and it's a, you know, good book. But is there something you want me to, something that you want to resonate with me or have me think about, maybe learn even?
Oh, yes. And I mean, as you're talking, like, oh, did I mean it intentionally or not intentionally? Well, we'll go with intentionally. I mean, I think, yes. I think what I want people to walk away with, I mean, I obviously to be entertained and moved by Jimmy, but like, I think what I like about Jimmy's experience in the world, I think he's an empathetic person. I think he's trying to feel things, and I think he's trying to allow others he's trying to recognize what other people are feeling. And in fact, I think that's helped him solve his mysteries. And so I think that's important for people to know. I think in a good subtext is that like, ultimately it's like, you know, we're all damaged in some way, you know, and we're all can all heal, and we can all try to be better people to ourselves and to others. So I think, you know, I guess maybe the subtext is like, let's just be kind. Let's not murder people. Let's not, you know, let's not steal. Let's not steal things. Let's, you know, let's not kidnap people. If we within the, you know, there's no mystery genre then, but I think it's ultimately just kind of like being about a better person. Like it's not, you know, like there's no subtext in the Three Stooges. I think that's just funny stuff. But I think there is in my books, hopefully trying to understand people who you might not initially understand and just be a better person.
Right. You know? Right. You know? Try to be open to others and understand that we all are damaged in some way. And some of it shows differently for different people. And sometimes, and we all do, you know, try to medicate.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is that, what's that about? Like, why, you know, maybe we should be more conscious that like, oh, maybe I'm medicating, or maybe I'm not medicating. Maybe I do need to be medicated, but maybe it shouldn't be, you know, a fifth of a whiskey a day or what have you, you know? It's just, I know. All right. Okay. You can do a fifth.
I need it.
Well, there you go. You're aware of it. You're aware of your problems, and your solutions. I think I'm the kind of writer who like, here's, you know, I'm not the Charles Dickens of mystery writers, guys. Like I don't have like an issue.
This isn't Charles Dickens. What are we
I know. What are we doing with our lives? This guy, I am kind of taking on issues of power. Like Jimmy, talks to people of power and tries to like, hey, you're just, you poop too. I poop. We all poop. Like, why are you a douchebag? And so there's that, but it's like, I'm not like an issue writer. Like I don't know if myself, if I could like really take on an issue I think I'd be too tempted to, like, examine, why am I writing about this issue? Why not that issue? Like, it'd just be...
Yeah.
So I kind of let the mystery story, as I'm working, kind of unravel itself and find something that's there for Jimmy to go through as well.
It's more like the pathway, you know?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully I'm not writing something disposable. And so far it doesn't feel disposable. It feels like people have really enjoyed it and connected to the character. And at a conference, I think it was last year's Left Coast Crime, father came up to me and he had read the book, and he said his son was in recovery for alcohol. And he was like, I really love this book, and I really connected to it. I gave it to my son, who's also an actor now too. And like, I'm like, so it was something for the father and the son to kind of have, you know, something to talk about, and a character in recovery, not a character who, like, is off the wagon or anything like that. Like, he's in recovery and it's working. He's struggling, but like, he's working towards it. So it's like a positive example of that, you know?
Yeah. Unlike Dave.
Yeah. Right. Unlike Dave. He's just sitting there quietly.
Oh, he's drinking.
Oh yeah. I'm sure. I hear the rocks rattling around in that glass.
Well, that's a good segue to, I was going to ask how you get into the mind of a character who is in recovery.
That's a great question. Well, I mean, I am personally not in recovery. Sometimes I feel like I need to say that. I am not in recovery, and hopefully
sure,
I don't have
sure, any. Sure, we believe you. Yeah.
Oh, really? and hopefully I don't have, I definitely don't have the same drinking habits that Jimmy did. So a couple of ways. One, I have a tendency to keep picking up, but I will always read, like, autobiographies, biographies, those kind of the self-help books of dealing with it. And you can kind of see the Venn diagram of, like, you know, people who have had issues of drinking and what caused them and where that sent them and stuff like that, and how they finally were able to get clean and sober. So it's collecting a lot of that. And it's also just kind of tapping into my own things that I've struggled with, of like bad habits that like might not be, I mean, ultimately, like one of the signs of addiction is when you're doing something that is disrupting your life, that thing that you're doing, being it drugs or sex or gambling, and if that thing is kind of taking control of your life and replacing, you know, going and seeing friends or eating dinner or whatever, then you have a problem. When you are consumed with doing the thing, that's when you have a problem. And like, so I think we all have had those kinds of things in our lives, and hopefully we've conquered them, or at least, you know, maintained, so we're not destroying our lives because we really need to go gambling. So it's kind of tapping into those things that I don't know if I've ever conquered, but I know I work towards, like, okay, we should be writing now and not gambling,
right.
not the slot machines or whatever, like, you know, but it is an eternal vigilance, like, you know, checking in, like, it's not, that's always with me. Like when I think about Jimmy, of like that, he is vigilant about his sobriety. Sometimes he falters in his vigilance, but you know, he's
from my research,
sounds terrible. From my experience and what I've read and from the people that I've met, like, you know, it's something, you know, that's a part of them. Like, you're not, that's why I'm also like, I'm also careful not to say he was an alcoholic or he was that, like he, you know, that will be something that he will carry on. But so that's why I use the word recovery rather than he is an alcoholic or was an alcoholic.
Yeah, because it's something I think that it's easy to slip into, whatever that addiction is, because it kind of eases reality, right? It kind of takes away any...
It eases reality and it feels good, and you don't have to deal with the thing that's causing you problems. You know, that's why I think, you know, I think like social media, we were talking about that earlier, like having that on your phone, it is so easy. Like, oh God, this standing in line is hard. Oh, I'll just spend some time on Instagram, or I'm trying to write this scene and it's not going well. You know what would feel really good right now? Instagram. And yeah. so you just go do that. And so you're relieving pressure, you know, that's in your body. You're relieving that pressure of this hard thing that you're doing.
Well,
what would be better would be like, okay, this is a hard thing.
I need to do the hard thing
rather than the easy thing. But our brains are so wired to like always feeling good. And then once you're feeling good, it's easy to keep trying to do that. The challenge is what happens with booze or pills or gambling or sex or, you know, internet addiction. Like eventually that does not work anymore. So that's why they generally escalate or, you know, and it just generally doesn't, it stops working, but you're always going to keep chasing that initial, oh, it feels good. But it's just, you know, like one of the things that I struggle with, like, it sounds terrible, is like YouTube. I have a hard time. I can go down a YouTube rabbit hole like nobody's business. And I've been trying really hard. Like I've been telling myself, you can go on YouTube after you finish your writing. And it's been a weird struggle. And I feel like my brain's been fighting me. It's like, come on, man. Just one more video. And right. And it's been hard. And I'm like, okay, it's been hard to write. And I feel like once I get through like a week or two of like YouTube after I'm writing or no YouTube, that maybe my brain will settle down. I'm not trying to compare it to alcohol addiction or withdrawal. But like, I just want to be clear. Like I want to be very respectful about that. But my brain, you know, I sometimes the book Jimmy brings up his lizard brain, which is the brain that part of his brain he refers to that was like his addiction, and like it'll stir like when he's like really struggling with something sometimes or what have you, like when he's upset, and I really think like sometimes in my lizard brain is like, you would be much happier if you spend an hour and a half watching a video breaking down Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory versus Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And which one's a better movie? Like, that would make me feel better. And, like, it's worthless. Like, who cares?
Right. Yeah.
But I will watch that video. And I need to, like, rewire my brain a little bit. Like, no, do the hard work first of the writing. And it'll get easier of the writing. But, like,
yeah.
It's a struggle.
Well, you know, YouTube's better than X2, right?
for some, yeah.
Well, it could lead to more trouble.
It could be to a lot of trouble, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't want to get to that.
No.
But it sounds like, okay, so you're very involved with Jimmy Cooper. It's a very personal character for you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to it. So when you go through a book and you're writing it from beginning to end, you know, it might take a year or whatever it takes, but at the end of it, and you send it in, get it published, how do you think that year has changed you then? Because you actually go through everything you put your character through. For you, it sounds like you really are involved. So the things he has to go through and the things you have to write about this character, you must feel. So I just wonder if it makes any changes in you, even as just a writer.
Al, you're asking the really hard-hitting questions. I did not expect that.
Well, this is the real deal. This isn't just a podcast.
Yeah. We're not just a podcast.
We're not just
the podcast. Oh, gosh. I don't – that's a great question. I don't know if I have an answer. First, there's such a relief of when it's done. I mean, I love writing, but I'm definitely one of the writers who loves to have written.
Yeah.
I love the challenge of it, except when I'm being challenged and then I really hate it. How am I changed? I'm going to answer that. I think I feel more confident of myself when I finish a book. And I don't know if it's just the finishing of the book or if it's what Jimmy's gone through. I feel like I have clear boundaries about how I want people to treat me. It is like going to war writing a book. And the feeling of accomplishment, be it finishing it, right? Yeah, I feel really relieved and relaxed and having go through what Jimmy goes through. I do feel more confident when I finish a book, having gone through what Jimmy's gone through. Wow. Well,
yeah. Yeah, you'd be driving down the road being chased by cops one day.
I could do it. I could do it. Though I feel like I do wonder, like, how does that work in Los Angeles? Like, except for even on the highways, there's so many cars. Like, I'm always amazed, like, that anybody can get anywhere in a high speed chase in Los Angeles. But it does happen. There's a video, gosh, maybe 2 years ago, we watched. It was like a 2 hour chase. the guy stole. He stole a car. The cops started chasing him. He stole another car. He ditched one car, got another car, drove that around, ditched that car, got a van. Like, and they, it took him like 2 hours to catch him. That's so amazing.
But, that was Dave.
Yeah. I didn't know they had allowed podcasts in prisons. But I,
oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he got out of early behavior.
You know? Oh, that's good.
He's a really
I'm not broadcasting guy. From my cell know, any longer.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, live. Cell block C.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's in the woman's ward. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right. So where do you see yourself going now with this? Like, do this is, you know, two books down. I always wonder with the series, if you kind of know ahead of time that you want to do six books, let's say, or 10 books.
I know there'll be at least six. I'm working on the third. Hopefully it'll be ready by the end of the summer before BoucherCon. BoucherCon 2024. Woo.
That's controversial con.
Oh, the controversial con.
I mean, I've never heard so much crap about one before. Oh, my God.
Well, that's all right. You know, sometimes we need... Listen, if you read anything about the Hugo Awards, like, that's... Like, I would rather have our crabbing than what happened with the Hugo Awards, to be honest. Like, that's crazy. Or, and romance writers, don't come at me, but Romancelandia is like, that stuff's way intense. I'm glad I'm not in those genres, to be honest. So I know I want to do at least six, but I can also see myself being with Jimmy for a very long time. I think right now I've chosen six because there's a color pattern with the covers. There was the first one's yellow, the second one's orange, the third one will be red background, and then I have like a blue, green, and purple. For the spoilers for the last three books, there's no spoilers there.
Spoilers.
We gotta be careful of spoilers, guys. Don't spoil the book cover color. And there's a couple other series that I wanted to start, and we'll see how those goes to those goes.
Those two go.
How those go, you know. Yeah, and I used to live in Minnesota, so it's okay.
And I'm Canadian, so I'm used to it. You know, I can do that, eh?
Oh gosh, so sorry.
Oh, no, boo.
Canada, man. Oh, yeah. Then you know what a skidoo suit is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
And a toque.
I dated years ago. I dated a woman from Canada, and somehow she brought up a skidoo suit. And I was like, what's a skidoo suit? And she was like, a skidoo suit. I'm like, what is a skidoo suit? And she was like, skidoo suit, skidoo suit. I'm like, shouting at me the word over and over will not help me understand. I do not know what a skidoo. I mean, I do now know what a skidoo suit is.
And runners and yeah, I know. Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm very Canadian.
Oh,
I just play an American on the radio.
Perfect, perfect. It's all lies, guys, all the way down. So I know I have at least six. I will probably have more because I really love writing Jimmy Cooper. So I can't imagine him not in my life. Like, yeah, it would be really sad. Like, oh, this is the last one I'm going to write.
He's going to outlive you.
That'd be fantastic. That would be fine. But I have some other series in mind that I think will, amuse and delight people as well.
So you care about the reader?
I do care about the reader. Oh. Yeah. Do you care about the reader?
No.
Who doesn't care about their reader?
I don't. I absolutely don't care. And now listen.
Canadians are friendly.
Oh, friendly. We're just friendly on the face. Come on.
Oh, yeah, I know. That was my Minnesota experience. Oh, yeah.
That's why we say sorry all the time.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Sorry. Yeah,
sorry, eh?
Jerk. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I care about the reader in the sense of, like, I'm hoping they'll come along on my journey. I don't care about three in the sense that I want them I'm writing what I think they'll like.
Yeah,
I'm
that's kind of what I was.
Yeah,
Are they over your shoulder while you're writing?
They are over my shoulder in the sense that I want to make sure I'm being clear and understood, and friendly. We all like friendly people. I have a whole other view of Canadians today. I'm not writing to the audience. I'm writing for me and what makes me feel alive, what makes me feel good, what I think is true to Jimmy. Hopefully everyone will come on the ride with that. So I'm aware that there's an audience and I'm aware of it. It goes back to, you know, when I was writing pilots to break into TV, it's like, you just need clarity, you know? So I'm aware of that. I want to be clear in my communication, but I named the second book. I'm not necessarily like, hey, everybody come into this house. I'm like, you want to come in? You can come in. So I care in the sense that I want people to have a good time and enjoy the book, but like I'm not writing it to be loved, because that's the exact reason why I stopped writing for television, because you can't write to be loved.
No, you write just to get your nipples hard.
you write for the warm fuzzies, warm fuzzies, not the nipples.
Well, I mean, you know, nipples are good. It's like, disgusting. Terrible.
Yeah.
Kind of behavior is this anyway? Yeah, but you know what you're going to do for the six books? So you say six.
I don't know what they'll be. They'll probably have the same naming convention. I can tell you the name of the third book is Go
For
Yourself. when I decided that, I'm like, that's really funny. So it's terrible. It's terrible. I'm a terrible, terrible person. But so I don't necessarily know, like, I don't have six of them outlined. I'm not much of an outliner. I have a sense of a direction, but I don't necessarily have, like, you know, in book four, Jimmy discovers his mortal enemy. Book five, he defeats his mortal enemy. Book six, the mortal enemy returns. I don't have that.
Let me write that down.
Yeah, there you go. Take it. It's yours. I have trust in Jimmy that Jimmy will kind of show me where he needs to go, and or more specifically where he doesn't want to go but needs to go. But no, I don't have him planned. And another part of that is because it's fine to read them in order, but I'm also conscious of, like, I don't necessarily know if I want them to have to be read in order. Like, I feel like the second book you could pick up without having read the first book. And that's a conscious decision. Like, so they're not, like, super planned out. It's going to be an experience of Jimmy's life for six books or more. Maybe they'll be 20. I don't know. Maybe Walmart will say, listen, if you change the name, you can be in our stores. And then I'll say to them, no. Maybe not. I don't know.
That's a lot of books.
But, you know, but I, at the same time, I'm enjoying doing it the way I'm doing it. So I kind of, I don't know. I don't know if a lot of books is necessarily so attractive. I mean, I say this now. I'm going to say this now.
Wait till you get
it. I don't know if a lot of books is so attractive that I want to change who I am. But I don't know. That's, you know, Penguin Random House. Make me an offer. And we'll see how much I stand by my ideals.
It's called the douchebag contract.
Sign me up. Sign me up.
Now, but with all these books, how do you keep track of continuity? Do you have, like, a series Bible? Do you have tools, a system?
I have started, what is it? Yes, because I did, because, like, every so often Jimmy will mention, like, I was in this movie, and then, like, you know, it'll be something funny. I'm like, ha, ha, ha. And then, you know, in the third book, I'm like, what was that movie? I could reference it again. So I do, yeah, I make a little note specifically about, like, Jimmy movies, and have those written down. I have to kind of keep track of continuity, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, because Jimmy has his mother is always a character, his sister's his character, but he also has a bit of a found family in that he has an assistant named Nora. He lives in West Hollywood, And one of the guys that lives near him is kind of, in some ways, his older brother, his found older brother named Mo. So, like, there's a found family that always kind of keeps coming back. You know, spoilers, his father returns in the second book. And so there's stuff there. So, yeah, I do have to kind of keep track of it. I wish there was an avid fandom that would do it for me. We're not there yet. So, yeah, there is kind of – it was so funny. When I came to write the second book, I stalled for, like, 2 weeks because I realized I had never written a sequel to anything before. And it was such a weird feeling. Like, I'd always written, you know, plays or pilots, you know, pilots that I hoped would go on and write sequels, but that never happened. So it's like this was the first time I had to confront, like, what is a sequel? What do I want to do? How much information do I want to repeat in hopefully an entertaining way? Like, how do a sequel? Oh my God. You know, and I feel like that's going to happen because the third book was like, oh man, here I am again. How am I going to do this? So yes, to circle back, yes, I write it down. I write it down.
So what are you trying to say?
Oh my God, I have so much anxieties about writing. Why am I doing this?
Yeah, like why would someone like that? Why writing? Like what's wrong with you?
What is wrong with me? I think is this an intervention?
Who hurt you?
Yes, intervention, Larry. Stop writing. That's a good question. You know what? Like I don't know why writing. I love to make things. I love to make things. And somewhere along the line, like, you know, I was a performer for a long time. I did improv. I've studied clowning. And like, so I like to make things. I like to create I like to create entertainments. And, so writing, I don't know. I guess I started writing maybe this is where I really started writing. At least for the stage. So there, I went to the University of Iowa. Go Hawkeyes, I believe.
That's not very convincing when you say I believe.
I believe. Go Hawkeyes. Rah-rah. Go football team. And there's this kind of at the theater department, I was a theater major, and there was an open mic night thing called No Shame. It was every Friday night. And basically you would show up with a script in hand, and there's 10 slots, and you know, there is space, you could go on, you can perform. And it was the most exciting thing because, like, every Friday, I don't know why, I'm like, I'm performing every Friday. And so maybe I'd have a script by Friday morning or maybe it'd be Friday afternoon, but I'd have something. I'd always have something. And I think, like, just that experience and that excitement of I'm putting something up and I'm risking being made a fool. in front of a slightly paying audience, they only paid $1, but it was so much fun just to do that, to have that high wire act of like, here's something I just wrote, let's try it out, kids. And that's true when I was performing improv, like that thrill and excitement of making something in front of people, and that was gonna disappear. And so. So it was kind of a natural thing to become a playwright, to try to get into TV because, you know, playwrights don't pay the bills. And it just moved into prose because after a while, writing scripts was no longer fun, but prose became fun and still is fun to write. So it's just kind of an inescapable thing. And I've been a reader all my life. Like, I can't imagine not reading. So it's a mixture of those two things, making something and just being a reader and, like, absorbing decades of good and bad. I guess that's why I'm a writer. I don't know. You know what? I just don't want to be an administrative assistant somewhere. So that's why I'm a writer.
Yeah. Well, you know, can always work at a park or something, be a park ranger. And...
I don't like the outside now.
Well, then you can work in the office of a park.
That sounds like administrative assistant now.
Well, you know.
I said I do not want to be an administrative assistant.
Well, I'm trying, okay? Have it work at a shopping mall.
You know what?
Okay?
You know what?
You can work at a popcorn store.
I should be a podcast host.
No. No. It's a terrible job.
House of... Let's see. What should I host? House of... horror?
House of...
No, house, of
house of...
House of crime? House of... mystery-ish? House of, mysteries?
Yeah, mystery house.
There mystery house. There you go. I should be the podcast host.
I've seen it. There's a lot of copies out there, but there's only one me.
Mm. I wonder why that is.
You can only be perfect once.
Ah.
Come on.
Yeah.
No, nobody wants to be me. I'm disgusting. Shameful.
That's right. I feel like we need to have an intervention with you.
Yeah, I've been waiting.
This self-hate, I don't know.
People just stay away. They don't want to be near me. Are you kidding?
Yeah, no, I get it.
I can't pay them enough.
No, this is why Dave is in prison. He did it to get away from you.
No, he loves being away. Anything he can do. Everybody is trying to be away from me. Except for my old dog. You know, he's 19 and he can't escape. Well,
he just can't run. Yeah, that's the problem. The dog wants to, but it's like, there's no will. There's no power anymore to do it. He can't open the door with his paws. And
you can still see the terror in his eyes, you know, when he looks. Oh. Yeah. I'm still alive.
It's you again.
You're still here.
Anyway.
Well, listen.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night with the dog with the pillow over your head? And the dog
all the time.
And
I think he's trying to be cute, but I think
he's like, he's just trying to create an alibi for himself.
Yeah, what a cute dog. He's always trying to be so nice.
My cute homicidal dog.
Yeah, he brings all of his friends in, and they all lay on the pillow on my face. What a nice
It's like the reverse of a cozy mystery.
Yeah.
Oh.
Listen, so how do people get a hold of you? I mean, we got to get into what your phone number, address. Let's talk about.
Would you like my social security number too? That would be.
Oh yeah,
I have my bank routing number.
Yeah.
I mean, you can find me on most of the socials at Write Larry Wright. You can also email me at hello@lawrencealanwrights.com. My website is lawrencealanwrights.com. You can find me there. On Instagram, Blue Sky, you can find me on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it.
Excrement.
Facebook, Write Larry. I think it's facebook.com, Write Larry Write. There's a theme, guys. There's a theme. So lots of ways.
I'm going to change mine to Wrong Al Wrong.
Wrong Al. But yeah, so yeah, Write Larry Write on your favorite social media. You'll probably find me.
Well, perfect. We'll have all that up with your books too.
Excellent.
And what else can I say? You know, pick up a Jimmy Coop mystery.
Yeah, pick them both up. Pick up copies for your friends and enemies.
Yeah, pick them up. You know, he needs the money.
I need the money because, again, I don't like the outside and I don't want to be an administrative assistant. So.
Yeah, he's having a struggle here. He's having,
right.
You know, he needs help. He's intervention.
I've got food to buy, you know, car payments, all that kind of stuff.
Gambling.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
I know.
So much gambling.
Well, we have to wrap it up. So, thank you, Lawrence Allen. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thanks, Larry.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.